up until the late 90s when I saw an interesting temporary job opportunity working for a charity called the King's Fund and our Home Office, or Department of the Interior, if that makes more sense, to look at working with the prison health services centrally at headquarters, because it was felt that it was an over-medicalized service. I then got caught up in some very fundamental health reforms and have worked directly to directors of offender health for over a decade. It became the longest job I've ever had. I'm retired now, but I'm lucky to have, through the university I work in, this international role that I've had actually for those 10 years as well, working on a World Health Organization project, the Health in Prisons Program. So that's me. I want to thank you for giving me... You can hear me okay? Yeah. The opportunity to update you on some important guidance that we're going to issue soon, published by the World Health Organization in Europe, concerning the governance of prison health services. The guidance will offer some advice on which government ministry should ideally control or be the stewards of health in our prisons. And before I get going, on a personal note, I would like to thank Lars Moller for not being here, because this enables me to return to San Francisco 44 years on. I was at Haight-Ashbury when I was 17, so that's delightful for me. And you're also looking at what may be the latest supporter for the Giants, because I got caught up in that whole match on Sunday and also got very close to the sort of mini riot that took place here. And I just want to say, go Giants. Okay. So back to the serious business of how do we ensure that when people are sentenced to a loss of liberty, they're not sentenced to ill health. As backdrop to my presentation, in recent years, some six European countries have carried out a very fundamental prison health service reform concerning stewardship of prison health. Now, by stewardship, I think I ought to say what I mean. It's concerning all the governance issues, lines of responsibility affecting the provision of healthcare services. So I'm including the people who direct the vision for those services, set goals, standards, monitor quality, the resourcing, the funding of those services, which set out to meet the health needs of incarcerated people and prisoners. And actually, it goes way beyond healthcare. It also means embracing all the wider public health importance and opportunities that prison offers society. And a recognition that health in a prison is also determined by the prison regime. It's a whole prison issue. So just six European countries have taken or are in the process of taking this stewardship revolution, moving it from Ministry of Justice over to Ministry of Health, having decided that it makes good sense to do that. But I should also mention that the Australians and the New Zealand has also, they've done similar reforms, and it's worth looking at them as well. I think the reasons that it's been done, by and large, are that those countries have either found that their health services were unsatisfactory, they were not offering an equivalent service to prisoners, or they felt just on human rights grounds and practical grounds that this was the right thing to do. So one final point before I sort of start going with the slides is that it's become increasingly apparent that if we fail to use this window of opportunity when people are in prison, the results can impact negatively on society as a whole. There's a likelihood of increased burden of disease in the wider community, and an opportunity is lost to address big public health issues adequately. Okay. This is the structure I'm hoping to use. I've got some promotional slides from lifted from my WHO bank of slides, just a few of those to give you context of what the Health in Prisons program is about, and then to move on to look at problems with the traditional model of arrangements. I'll draw a little bit on my own experience having been at the heart of the reforms in the UK, and finally tell you what's likely to be in the guidance that's coming out probably March or April next year. So Health in Prisons program, it's run on a shoestring, but it's been lasting a very long time. 1995 we started with just 8 countries. That's the aim now. I think the aim originally was just to help East European countries. The Iron Curtain had come down. They had great problems to sort out, and that was probably the driver then, but this has become the driver now. So, again, just more background as to why we needed the project, really, to help promote awareness nationally and internationally that prison health is a big public health challenge. Dialogue. We get together in a room, all of our members, or as many who can attend, at least once a year, and we have small groups looking at issues, and we publish evidence-based papers, often on topics like that you would think of, like TB, bloodborne viruses, harm reduction, that sort of thing. But this is a new departure for us to look at health systems with our next publication. The third issue, I think, is very fundamental, and I will be explaining that. I think that we can offer to mitigate this against this problem of isolation of prison health staff with this kind of reforms. And human rights is another key issue to address. I'll be mentioning that. Those are the countries. It's been a great pleasure to visit colleagues and prisons in all of these places. And very key is having this very strong group of international partners, and they are on our steering group. It's immensely helpful to us. We also co-publish, we co-run events, and it's been really great for the project to bring these folk together, and also to help with our funding, because we are very thinly funded. Some typical activities of the Health in Prisons program are these things. This has been our bestseller, translated into Farsi and Chinese, and does well around the world, and we're publishing a new version of this. I'll put up information on the website later, and you may like to obtain a copy at some point. And I think that's enough for promoting the Health in Prisons program. So moving on then to look at problems with the traditional model of doing things, and a little bit about how we've handled it in the UK. The rationale for this model can be summarised under these sorts of headings. Human rights improvements, and I picked out dual loyalty as an issue, because if you take doctors, for example, we're used to confronting any dual loyalty issues that might exist with, say, the military or occupational health and so on. But what about in this setting? And it may be that safeguards are in place to try and mitigate against it, but if you're actually employed within the system by the director, that's quite a heavy burden to stand up against that director if he's also paying a salary. Plus the fact that you're socialising with your colleagues, and you may find that in essence you're compromising on your duty to your patients. Staffing improvements, isolation. Under the new model, one of the characteristics is that the health services are coming in from the outside, funded from the outside, and the model is very much that people work part-time in prisons. So GPs, for example, may work a day or two in prisons and the rest of the time in the community. And I think that's a healthy model, if that can be carried out. And resourcing, I'll just draw on the UK example. It's probably 2.5 times the resourcing that we had when we started out at the beginning of the reforms. That's a huge increase. We may be amateurs compared to you, but we're the biggest imprisoners in Western Europe, with a rate of about 140 at the moment per 100,000. I realise that may sound, you know, small compared to your 700 plus, whatever it is. But anyway, In terms of resourcing, every country that's carried out this reform has done well. The other points, I think I'll come to these further on, but these are about the self-interest, appealing to society's self-interest, really, for improved safety in public health and so on. So I can't read that without glasses.
2 minutes.
2 minutes, okay. He wants me to go faster. Can we have separate but equivalent services? And I would say that we can't really. If you separate off the system, then it will be unequal. And my model here is that with education in America, you had Brown versus Board of Topeka Education, and they said that if you had separate but equally well-funded black schools, they were nevertheless separate but inherently unequal. And I think that you could transfer that to prisons. In England, in the 1990s, we had a British general, as a retirement job, was the inspector of our prisons, and he said that our prison health services were scandalous and that we had to reform them, and that led to our reforms and the process that I'm talking through. Since 2006, by the way, we've been integrating closer and closer the services, and now we have one agency in the Department of Health covering healthcare in courts, prison, in jails where the police are, as well as in convicted prisoners and so on. So what's likely to be in the guidance when it comes out? I'm not sure I've got time to really cover all of this. Sure. Couple more? Okay. Basically, I think we're going to suggest that with the growth of sophistication in health services, it's becoming increasingly untenable to expect a separate hived-off service to deliver properly for its audience. Steadily increasing costs means that there will always be a problem, and that the MOH model is the way forward. We'll be giving some historical accounts of how it's been carried out in the countries that have done it. There's a list of the countries in bullet point one. We're launching next year because we like to do in things that are on anniversaries. And in 2003, we had prison health is an important part of public health, the Moscow Declaration. And I think this is a logical step forward from that. I'll just flick on a little bit quicker. I think these reforms, looking ahead, we will see them in a historical context that says, you know, there was a time when we had no medical services. Then we had, if you like, first aid, very rudimentary services. They became more sophisticated. And as we move forward, the sensible thing to do is to move to a Ministry of Health-dominated model. And these are the sorts of goals that we ought to be having in mind when we think of that. Moving prison health from the margin into the mainstream, talking more about health in general, recognizing that the prison regime is very important in creating health, thinking of prisoners as people who happen to be in prisons when we're dealing with them, and looking at closely amalgamated services, not just separately equivalent ones. I don't think I've got time to really talk too much about this. I'll let you just scan that one. I suppose the last bullet point's a favourite one of mine, that we're talking about not abandoning the involvement of prison staff. It's quite critical that the director and his staff think they've got a huge role to play in this. It's just that they no longer control the budget strings and the general direction. Takeaway messages, I think, from our work. Prison health is a key part of public health. That won't change. I'll let you scan down those. Whole government responsibility, the rationale being we move to the Ministry of Health-dominated model. And, you know, we're still going to have these things to confront. It's not a magic bullet. And I would say to people who aren't ready to make the change yet, you do the best with where you are at the moment, and these issues will always be with us, I suspect. Nice quote, just to remind us, you'll have seen that credited to him and other people. And the website's there. Please do look at it. I've got a few cards I think I can dig out if anybody needs to contact me. And just to say, it's about people meeting, sharing ideas, and sharing best practice. And it's been a real privilege to do some of that with you here today and hear about some of the really big issues that don't necessarily leap out at you, like isolation and stuff like that. Thanks for listening.